Hey, everybody, and welcome to NWR Connectivity, episode 290. We're 10 away from 300. And joining me, as always, is NWR's director, John Reardon.
Hello, everybody.
And guesting today, I think the only person that I know who really likes Metroid 2 on Game Boy, that would be one Justin Berube.
What's up, everybody? I'm back.
Yeah, it's been a while. I think, what was it, like E3 time? Something like that? I forget. It's been a long time.
Yeah,
were you there for the Mario Golf episode?
Yeah, I was there for Mario Golf, but you weren't.
Yeah.
Yes. yeah.
Hasn't been
I will say, I've come around on Mario Golf a little bit. More that I'm just not as angry. I'm kind of just neutral.
No, I'm still pretty angry. Yeah. I tried the DLC the other day, and I'm like, this isn't so great. And then the CPU is just doing terrible shots.
So the thing with the DLC that is a little disappointing is that it's just a bunch of par 3 courses in New Donk City. And it's not bad. It's just that I wish it was more than just a bunch of par 3 courses in New Donk City.
The cool thing about New Donk, I will say, is they give you two sets of holes to go off of.
Yeah.
But it's not enough. The game just feels really big, especially compared to the previous Mario Golf. It's like a joke.
I have come on the other side. I think the mechanics are fine. That's kind of where I settled on that. And I still have a lot of problems with the game. I think the single player campaign is just bad. I finished it, but I don't think it's any good.
No,
but it's not. My son really likes, he does the charge and chuck, how like when he does something good, he kind of like stomps and like does a pose. My son does that. So it makes my like 5 out of 10 on Mario Golf like grow multiple sizes in the heart.
My opinion really hasn't changed. I just think it's not good. I really don't like the power shot mechanics, and I don't like it so much in the game. Go back and listen to that episode. I hate that game.
I do like how John, the person who actually likes the game, is the one person of the three here that did not play the DLC.
No, I played the game, had a great time. And then I moved on to other things. Whatever issues Justin has where he hated the game and then was like, I need to feel more pain and went back for the DLC. Like, that's...
I heard they fixed some things. I want to try it.
What would...
Did they really...
What would you fix? What
I heard... I think they changed something with, like, the... I haven't looked too deeply into it, but I think they may have changed something with the seeing where the ball is going to be hit beforehand. But I
don't think they
I didn't
really
notice
did.
Much of it.
Oh, maybe no, that's did. Perfect.
No, and I hate how the map, you can't zoom into the ball, the map, mini map is terrible. There's so much I don't like about this game. You know, you're just making me upset.
I don't know, Justin, you might be bringing me back to hating it.
You'll spend 15 minutes on that one and then go back to any of the other Mario Golfs and you'll understand.
I actually did that, and I kind of like the mechanics the Switch one more.
It's dumbed down in some ways. I really don't like it.
A happy medium between the two is really what I would want. That's what it comes down to. Because I think they're like, yeah, like the fact of actually being able to be like, oh, that tree is going to be in my way. Because sometimes I don't think the Switch version gives you enough information for some of that stuff.
It totally doesn't.
There's a line going through the tree. That's how you know.
No, you don't. No.
Yes,
you
there don't. Is. Coming off the ball? Yeah, there's a line going through the tree.
No, it doesn't work.
Well, no, if you're farther away, no.
Oh, that's when you got it. That's why it's like a skill-based game as opposed to put cursor over hole and push A 3 times.
I like that better. Because then you also have to take into account. No, but it doesn't tell you the wind or any of the other conditions on anything. You still have to like. What it's showing you in the other games is optimal if there's no other conditions where it will go if you hit a perfect shot. You can still screw up.
Yeah, because you need to hit the perfect shot.
Yeah.
I mean, that's also like a lot. I don't know. A lot of other golf games that are good do a very similar thing.
Just go back to the episode if you want to hear me rant about this more. I don't need to
rehash. Something that John and I hate. so I was a little bit of why I just told John that you were coming on the show is because you posted about how you beat Metroid 2. I think were you playing it on like Super Game Boy?
Yes, I was playing it on a Super Game Boy.
On like a 3D TV, it looked like?
Well, no, it's actually a CRT, but that bezel thing around the edge of the TV in the upper right corner, that was from a 3D TV we got years ago. And I just stuck it on the CRT.
That's funny. Yeah, so the Metroid 2 on Game Boy, you like it.
Yes.
I think I might have been one of the only person that wasn't just like, that's bullshit when we talked about it, because I think there are elements of that are good. It's just that it's compromised by the hardware. But you seem to earnestly love this game.
I do like it a lot. I think it's one of the better Game Boy games. One of my favorite Game Boy games, probably top 10, even though, I mean, I haven't played every Game Boy game, but I have quite a few.
You've probably played enough.
Yeah, I've played enough. but I've been going back through the Metroids this month. I've been trying to I'm going to try and beat them all, the main ones, and maybe Other M before Dread comes out. And I played through the NES Metroid, and I kind of like that game too, but I do have some issues with it. Metroid 2, I think, improved on the first game in a lot of ways, but I think there's some things the first two Metroid games do better than the later ones. And a lot of that is like the feeling of isolation in Dread, as you will, and just giving you like a, it's like a darker setting, like the black backgrounds and like the music and especially the sounds in Metroid 2. Like, I really like the music and like the ambiance and everything that they put into that game. One of the things about not having a map in Metroid is it really, you don't have a map in the first two games, for those who don't know, is it really relies on your instinct in like thinking back, and you really do feel like you can get lost in the caverns of the game, unlike some of the later ones where you can see where you've fallen and whatnot. And I think some of the more modern Metroid games could benefit from having more areas where you don't get the map for a long time, or maybe you only get pieces of the map, not the full map, and things like that.
So even if you like pass through a room, it doesn't tell you what the map is? Is this like your vision of an alternate reality Metroid game?
I think it'd be cool maybe if in a Metroid you would not get the map right away, but maybe you get to a point where you get a map where it's just tracking where you've been, and then maybe you get the full map like somebody left it.
Is that not how it works?
No, I get what you mean, Justin, and I think it's, I don't think it's ever anything that's going to happen.
Because no, I don't.
I think people would be very mad about it, but I can totally get behind the idea of like you go into an area and maybe it's a little more open, kind of like how some of Metroid 2 is, and like you go through it and you do not have a mini map that tracks it, and you get to a certain point where maybe it is like a map room of some sort that then like almost Heroes Paths it, where it's just that like, this is where you've been actually.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. And then later on you get a full map.
Like, yeah, like I can actually get behind that idea. I think that's kind of interesting.
How closely are you following the Metroid Dread stuff, or are you kind of blacking that out to not get spoilers?
I've been following it somewhat closely till this last trailer when I'm like, you know what, okay, I've seen enough. This last one.
Because I know, and I think they showed this off in like the Treehouse stuff, but like it seems like the way the map works in that is a lot more like granular than it is in the other ones, where as opposed to tracking in giant grids, it is kind of just tracking a small path around you of what you'd explore and doesn't show you like the individual rooms. So that might honestly not be horribly far off from what you're describing.
Yeah. I mean, all I'm saying is like, there's like something to be said about being dropped in a cave basically and exploring yourself and sometimes getting lost and not knowing if you can go back the way you came or how you even got there sometimes. Because sometimes in the first Metroid, you'll just like fall in a pit and you kind of lose any sense of how far you've gone from where you were, so you kind of have to work your way back.
Yeah.
And sometimes you just keep going deeper and find secrets, and you got to work your way back. But I mean, it does get annoying sometimes when you do get lost, so I can understand how that's difficult. But Metroid 2, you don't really have that problem. It's a lot more linear. It kind of guides you to each section, and once you kill all the Metroids in each section, it opens up the next section. And the only reason to really go back is for missed power-ups, which the game doesn't even track, so it's probably less important than the later games. And Metroid 2 did a lot of things to advance the series that probably Super Metroid gets a lot of credit for. I mean, you can kneel down and shoot, you can shoot downwards. It adds the ball jump, it adds the cool spider ball thing. Just a lot of things. Oh, and one of my problems with the original Metroid is, I think this is the biggest problem with the game, is when you die, you come back with only 30 health, and it's like impossible to refill. Yeah, it's horrible.
Terrible.
Unless you find another E-Tank. I think the game would benefit hugely if you just came back with full health or even 50% of your health or something like that. But Metroid 2 does have items that you just like walk into and will give you all your health back or all your missiles back.
Mm.
So there's that, and there's saving in the game, which I guess technically the first game had in Japan if you played it on the disc system.
Yeah, I played that on Switch Online, and it was weird to have a Metroid game with saving.
Yeah, I did play someone's Famicom version on a Game Boy Advance SP years ago, and I noticed some difference. Like, there's no rapid fire built in if you just hold the B button down, there's just like little changes and things like
that. The cool thing that we talked about this back on the Metroid 1 episode, just the Famicom disc system has like that other sound channel.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it would mess me up if I wasn't so familiar with like the sounds of NES Metroid. But like I kept on hearing things. I'm like, that's not what I remember. This is weird. But it was really cool to hear that, though.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. I didn't play through that version, but I have heard the sounds from that version. It's like the same music, but like a little different.
Yeah. No, I mean, I can get behind your support of Metroid 2. Like I do. I think it's a game that, I mean, we kind of learned it with Super Metroid when we were talking about it on last week's episode that, like, it's not entirely because, like, John and Matt played that in the 2000s, firmly in the 2000s. I do love, like, Matt's our most passionate Super Metroid defender, and he played it, like, 2 years ago.
It's because it's still new to him. He hasn't had time to sour on it.
But I do think, like, Metroid 2 is, like, if you grew up with a Game Boy or are, like, you know, experienced a lot of those games, I think it's easier. Like, I totally understand where you're coming from, mm-hmm. but I also didn't really play Metroid 2 until mid-2000s, something like that. So, like, it was a lot. I mean, by that point, like, I think I had played Super Metroid. I think I'd played some Prime games. I think I played Fusion and Zero Mission by that point, the first time I played Metroid 2. So, like, going back to it was very tough, but I could see, like, if that happened to be one of the Game Boy games I got as a kid, like, say, I mean, I don't know, like, I love Super Mario Land 2. I think it's a better game than Metroid 2, personally. But, like, there are games that I got on Game Boy as a kid that, like, I can go back to, if, like, you know, either of you were experiencing it for the first time now, you would probably not like it as much as I did when I played it in, like, 1994.
I will say I played Mario Land 2 for the first time when it came out on the Virtual Console on 3DS and thought it was fantastic.
Good to hear.
Yeah.
It's been a while since I played that game. But going back to Metroid, I do want to say
Metroid. Bring the Switch online, damn it.
Yeah. Go on. Metroid 2 is like the game that I really fell in love, made me fall in love with Metroid. The first game I remember playing, and I was very young at the time, and I don't think I could wrap my head around the concept that it's just one giant stage, because I'm used to most games on NES. It's like, get to the end of the level, go left to right.
Yeah.
And then you get to Metroid, you're like, what? Up and down? Like, where's the end? It doesn't end. It's a maze. And as a little kid, that's very confusing, especially when there's no map, and especially when it doesn't really tell you much about the game elsewhere. And I'm not really reading much at the time, because I was playing games before I could even read, going back that far. And, yeah, Metroid 2, like I said, it was more linear, so it was easier for me to figure out. And it just kind of clicked. And, I just really enjoy that game. But from there, I did go on to Zero Mission, which I think is a great game. I think there are some issues with it. I did tweet about it. I don't know if you guys saw. I do think some of the power-ups are hidden behind like a very high skill set. I don't know if you guys got 100%.
I totally agree.
Yeah, and I think it might be too high for most people. And I think those types of techniques that are needed should really only be used for more advanced players who are looking to sequence break things that are built into the game purposely. They're like, advanced players, try this. Because if you're trying to 100% that game, like, there's certain people
you
who I know
to
enjoy Metroid.
You need to 100% that game. Right?
You're just talking about like missile tanks and energy tanks, right? Not upgrades.
Yeah, nothing you need to beat the game. Okay, but some of it's like really ridiculous, like high skill ceiling stuff that even if you're a more casual Metroid fan, it's like, I want to get all the items, you might not be able to do it. And the game doesn't, I had to look up some of the stuff because some of the techniques, like the way you have to hold the buttons, I didn't understand the mechanics for how it worked. And it's really...
Did you read the manual?
Yes, I did read the manual.
I don't think, that's the thing, is I don't think some of that stuff's in the manual. And I think that's astoundingly fair point that I agree with. Like, Zero Mission, I mean, I feel like every Metroid game except for Samus Returns is kind of a pain in the butt to 100%. Because I think Fusion has some missable stuff, I think, that, like, if you don't get it your first time through an area, you might not be... I'm not 100% sure.
It's been a long time.
But, like, Super is really not enjoyable to 100%. I think Zero Mission kind of locks it out by having a lot of it be behind Shine Sparking and stuff like that. And then, I mean, once you get to, like, Metroid 1 and Metroid 2, those actually might be more enjoyable to 100% compared to some of the crap you have to do in Zero Mission.
Yeah, I mean, the only problem with Metroid 1 and 2 is, I mean, I think there may be extra energy tanks in Metroid 1, so you might not know if you got them all, so that's kind of annoying. Metroid 2, it's, like, really hard to know.
Yeah.
I mean, you'll know if you got everything, but hunting things down in that game has got to be a headache. I will say that, because you don't really know if you got everything in each area. It's just, like, one thing. Zero Mission, I really enjoy the game, but like I said, that hunt for 100% on that is very annoying. And I think the last area, like the new area, is kind of poorly designed for a retraversal. It's very annoying to get around, and that's a bit of a headache. So I think Zero Mission is a very good game if you just play through it, but going back is kind of a pain. But I think it's one of the better Metroid games from my recollection. But we'll see how I feel when I get through all of them again.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I mean, we have our fusion episode that we're going to do end of the month. But I mean, for me, it's super, super still my number one. But fusions, looking to be higher than I thought.
I had the realization today, like, man, I think I still like Zero Mission better, but like fusion is making a fight for my favorite. I think
there's also playing it before Dread and knowing that like, what happens in Fusion is getting followed up on in less than a month.
Yeah.
It actually makes me appreciate the narrative a lot more.
I think that the narrative is just really...
It's way better than
really
I remember
well
it.
Well done. Like, I'm really invested in the story. But we can save that for...
The funny thing with that is that, like, when I have played Fusion in the past, I have never felt that way. And I do think there's something to be said for anticipation for Dread and the fact that we are getting a sequel to Fusion 19 years later after the fact. That like makes me more interested in the narrative.
No, I've really been curious what they're going to do next, because it's been a long time, but I remember thinking to myself, like, after Fusion, like, spoilers, I guess, for Fusion. Sorry, everybody. Samus like blew up a Space Federation like ship thing. She was told not to do it. So, like, is she a fugitive? What's going on? Like,
are they going to keep the suit? You not to blow that up.
Yeah. So, like, I'd be like, wow, they probably want, like, Samus's head on a stick, but I guess maybe not.
I honestly wonder what, like, the opening crawl for Dread is going to be, because, like, there's some stuff that needs to happen between Fusion and Dread that I don't think Nintendo has shown us, despite their efforts to. I mean, I don't know. I still think that a lot of what Nintendo has shown us. I'm not going to argue that it's not spoilers, and let's not talk about the specifics of what they've shown in trailers, but I think a lot of it's from very early on in the game.
Yeah, that's why a lot of it looks like it's from the same area, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, they keep on showing the same couple boss fights, the same couple story segments, and it seems like that's all from the opening hours. And that's still, I can totally understand wanting to go into the thing totally clean, like not knowing anything.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't think the public at large is going to know about the back half of that game until a week after it comes out, when Nintendo inevitably has a trailer spoiling the back half of that game, because that is how modern marketing works. I have not seen Shang-Chi yet. Existing on the internet means that I know about all the characters and plot details of Shang-Chi just by what Marvel promotions have been.
I did want to talk about how I played Zero Mission, how I plan to play Fusion, which is through the Game Boy Player with the component cables going through an OSSC in my HD.
That's wonderful.
That is hot.
It's better than me playing it on my Wii U gamepad.
Yeah, so, I mean, I was able to add some scan lines to that, because, I mean, Game Boy Advance didn't have scan lines, but if I was playing it on the Game Boy Player, it would, and kind of made it look a little nicer. The only problem is you have to use the GameCube controller, which is kind of not
great. That does not sound ideal.
No.
I definitely crapped on the Wii U when it came out, probably not as publicly, because I didn't feel like dealing with the like garbage from Nintendo fans about it, because people got very defensive about it. I get it. Third place console, you get defensive of it. That's how I feel about the GameCube. But I actually kind of like the way the Wii U gamepad feels to control. Like, the D-pad's good, the buttons click in nicely. Like, does it sometimes feel and look like a Fisher Price controller?
Yes.
Does it feel good to play a video game on? Also, yes. The Wii U will go down as Nintendo's biggest failure, not named the Virtual Boy. That's fact.
I think it's a bigger failure.
It's a bigger stage. Like, Virtual Boy, you could shutter after a couple months and just be like, nothing to see here. The N64 is coming out next year. Pokemon.
Yeah.
We still have a Game Boy and a console and another console coming. It doesn't matter. Wii U, it's kind of like,
Yeah. But I don't know. A little bit of defense of the Wii U. And also, like, as I'm playing Fusion, I realized I'm like, man, there's so many good Game Boy Advance games accessible on this.
So I tried this when I was grabbing footage for Star Fox Command. I hooked up my Wii U to a CRT because the Wii U has regular composite out.
Yeah.
And so playing like DS or Game Boy Advance games on a CRT, like Justin was talking about with scanlines and stuff, boy, those games really benefit from a CRT screen. It looks great.
I can see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like DS was weird because I was like, I'm like, this is almost the resolution of an N64. In theory, this ought to look great on CRT. Turns out it does.
For a while, I used to keep a CRT around. And then I had kids, and having a giant CRT TV in my house did not make sense. I should maybe keep an eye out for a small one or something.
Yeah, get a smaller one. Because, I mean, I really think older games definitely look better on
it.
They do. And there's no latency problems with the lag, which really ticks me off.
I recently got a black and white TV.
Wow.
And there's a TI-99 computer at work that hooks up with the devil prongs, which would work with the black and white TV. And boy, am I tempted, because we have a copy of Donkey Kong for it. And ooh, it is beautiful.
That's awesome.
I want to see that. But can I talk about Samus Returns briefly?
Absolutely not.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah, I started it a couple nights ago. I'm thinking I don't like it as much as I remember, because I just feel like
where were you on it when you first played it?
I thought it was a pretty good game. It wasn't my favorite, but it's been a while since I played
original. Unfortunately, my take on it exists forever. I give it a 9.5.
You can never escape. We republished it.
Yeah.
In video form.
I mean, like, I agree with what I wrote at the time, but I had a blog post go up alongside that where I'm like, which is the best Metroid game? Samus Returns, Zero Mission, or Super Metroid? And that's insane. There are things that I like about Samus Returns, but boy howdy, is it not Zero Mission or Super Metroid.
No, so my thoughts, and I'm just past this where you get the spider ball and dropped into the third area, I guess it is. Combat kind of sucks. They really dug deep into that melee counter thing, and it's like every stupid little enemy, you kind of have to stop and wait for them to attack you, and then you have to counter. And I think the counter should really be on a shoulder button, because one of the mechanics of the game is if you're charging up a shot and you counter, you like will instantly shoot a charged up shot at the thing. But with the way everything's on the face button, and you have to, sometimes they want you to jump and counter things because you can shatter frozen enemies when they're with the counter ability. It's just a lot going on in the face buttons. And I think I don't remember if the other shoulder buttons are even used, like the ZR and ZL, but it would be nice to have the option to put it there, but you can't.
I don't think it had any new 3DS support.
Yeah, and it would have been nice to have an option for that, because I think it would have benefited greatly from that. But this combat is really kind of annoying in that game, and I think it would have worked way better if only a few enemies that you run into normally had the thing where you had to counter them, and just bosses and stuff.
It's my thing. I love the melee counter. I will also not argue that it is horrendously overused, especially in the first half of Samus Returns. Yeah. I think it gets a lot better by the end. Okay. And I hope that's what it's going to be like in Dread. Like, I think in my review from when Samus Returns came out, I think I make a comment there about how this is the new thing, they focus on it. But by the end of the game, you can see like, okay, this is just like another tool that Samus has, because I think that's an important thing with the melee counter, is that Samus actually has a melee attack.
No, I think it's cool. It's just overused. There's so much of a focus on it. And Metroid's a lot about the exploration, and that really slows and halts your exploration over and over again. And I've noticed, like, since your blaster like doesn't even do much damage to you, you can like just keep firing away over and over. It takes forever to like kill things, and you're like, why? Like, these aren't even like important enemies in any way. But oh no, you can use the missiles and kill them quickly, which is actually a better idea. However, for whatever reason, the missiles aren't just another button. It's you have to hold R and then shoot the missiles. And I mean, I don't remember all the power-ups and how it plays out, but I just feel like from this point in the game, it probably would have been better to put the counter on like the R button, and the missiles is its own separate button, and not something you have to hold to keep on is the X button, which is where the counter is now.
Yeah. Yeah, they preserved that from the Game Boy Advance ones. And
yeah, I don't know if that was really necessary. So, I mean, I'm enjoying the game. It's just like there's certain things like that really tick me off about it. But we'll see how I feel by the time I get to the end.
I love the way it plays, whilst also thinking that it's not a great game.
Get ready for Dread, everybody. The same team's doing it.
I mean, so one thing, I mean, they have kind of already shown in Dread that they've really improved like the offensive capability of the melee counter, using it not as a retaliation. So I think that will hopefully solve a lot of the problems with it.
Yeah, I hope so, too. I still have very high hopes for Dread. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Like giddy for Dread at this point. Especially, especially playing Fusion.
I should have done Other M first.
I'm doing that last.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to finish Fusion and then I'm going to be like, well, I have time to play Other M because I'm almost done with Fusion. I'm going to be like, I'm going to have time for Other M.
Give you more review
Dread.
Games.
That's true. That's true. Maybe I'll play Axiom Verge.
Yeah, do that. Those games rule. So, Justin, you've also been playing Cruisin' Blast a little bit, which.
Yeah,
please. The Cruisin' series, which you might remember from Nintendo 64, and it kind of lived on in arcades, weirdly still licensed by Nintendo, which always kind of brings me joy.
Yeah.
Seeing that, like, Raw Thrills is out there making arcade games that have to have a Nintendo copyright on it somewhere. But it seems like Cruisin' Blast is fine. Maybe not amazing. There's, like, no
in all
online...
honesty, the original Cruisin' games on N64 weren't amazing either.
So. No.
No, but I was I remember as a kid, like, I was young.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They were fun.
I got Cruisin' USA when it came out, and I'm like, man, this is just like driving. And I'm just like, no, it wasn't.
So real.
I have a lot of memories of the minor league baseball team by me. Like, they had like a little arcade area that I think is now, it's been gone for years. But maybe it was the Fast and Furious one that is technically a Cruisin' game, but branded as Fast and Furious for because money. But like those games were super fun to play in arcades too. Like because there is just like a loosey goosey arcade fun to them.
Yeah, my first experience with Cruisin' was I was in Hershey, Pennsylvania for a Hershey Park.
Yeah,
and in the hotel.
Hershey Park represent, man.
Yeah, this was summer of '96, so right before the N64s came out, and I was like hyped for N64 like crazy. And I went into their arcade, and they have Cruisin' USA, and it's saying like Nintendo Ultra 64, and I'm like, wow, this is the power of N64. I don't have to wait.
I also played that arcade cabinet at some point around that time. They also at Hershey Park. Once again, it's been a while since I've been there specifically to their arcades. I played like a buttload of Versus Super Mario Brothers there like a decade ago because I just found a cabinet for it and like was like, all right, guys, I've been on enough rides. I'm just going to play Versus Super Mario Brothers for like an hour.
Nice. Yeah, it's an interesting game.
The Wii version of Cruisin' has a 25 on Metacritic.
That's not great.
No, I'm actually tempted to get it now. That's because that's like beyond the like this game isn't very good and into like the oh, this game's very bad.
Yeah,
I'm tempted.
Let me talk about Cruisin' Blast. I mean, I did play it in the arcade a few years ago. I think also in Hershey.
Just dude, like, Hershey Park is great.
Yeah, but I'm like, oh man, I've heard about this. It had some cool features I never tried. Like you could scan like a QR code with your score and upload it somewhere. I think that's not in the home version. But yeah, it's an arcade racing game. And when I say arcade racing game, I don't mean an arcade style racing game, which a lot of people would assume by that. I mean, like, it feels like you're playing an arcade game. There's like a lot of things going on as you drive through the stages, and I think they don't really matter too much, but it's very busy, the stuff going on around you, like dinosaurs running by, Ferris wheels just running over the road, and I don't think you can really run into them or have it mess you up, but it's just like a lot of eye candy going on, like crazy amounts. And there's like a lot of huge drops when like stuff like that. It'll kind of remind you of Excite Truck and Excite Bots in that way.
The masterpieces.
Yeah, but I would say that they're a lot more refined in gameplay than Cruisin' Blast because Cruisin' Blast like is like a very arcade game. Like you're gonna, it's kind of like you're sitting down playing the arcade game and you just want like 2 minutes of like ridiculous eye candy with explosions and car racing. You can drift, and if you drift you can build up a meter to give you like a boost, I guess, and if you double tap the gas or the drift button you can pop a wheelie. And
hell,
if you hit,
yeah.
If you hit jumps, you'll like do backflips to your car and get a boost, or you can land on other cars, do that. You could also do like a side wheelie when you're turning and hit cars that way. And there's a nitro system where you think you have 3 nitro boosts per race, which you can use to give you a boost. As you beat stages, it gives you money, and it also levels up your car. You can get to level 5, and that's the highest, I think, and then you stop leveling up your car, and every level increases your car stats that you are using. So there's a little bit of a grind if you want to grind up all the cars, but I mean, it doesn't take that long from what I could tell to max out a car. I've only played a little bit, and I maxed out one car probably after like an hour or 2 hours of gameplay. But there are a lot of cars, so there's a lot to do. The gameplay seems kind of challenging on normal, so I dropped down to easy. I think there's 4 difficulty levels. Maybe because my car wasn't upgraded more, it was a little harder. But there may be kind of challenging. I'm not sure. But there is kind of like a pay-to-win system within the game, not real money. Because after you finish races and find things on the track, there's money lying around. You can cause other cars to crash and other things to earn money after every race. You can buy more nitro boosts at the start of a cup. So you might just want to like save up a ton of money and load up nitro boosts to play through that cup. Like it's a one-time use only thing, and then just cheese the hell out of it. The only other thing I can think of off the top of my head is they hid 3 keys in each level. And as you collect the keys, I think that's what unlocks the ability to purchase more cars with the money earned. So a lot of the cars are locked behind finding the keys, a certain number of the keys. Then you use the money you earn from races to buy some of the cars and dinosaurs and unicorns and stuff like that. But yeah, it's not a very deep game. It's enjoyable and stupid fun, but don't expect like a super deep game with this. Cause I'm like sure. Telling people, yeah, it's a fun game, but it's not like crazy deep.
So you're saying, if I can drive as a dinosaur in this game, and I might have a 3-year-old who would lose his mind over that, I should probably get this game.
Yeah, you should probably get the game. And like the best deal I've seen for the game, I think, I didn't go digging too much, is Best Buy right now. The game's $40, but they send you a $10 gift card in your email when you buy it.
All right. Talk amongst yourselves. I'm going to buy this game on Best Buy.
Just hop on Best Buy.
Make sure that deal's still going. But yeah, that's what they did for me. But yeah, I thought it was a good deal. It's like $30 for like a stupid arcade racing game. It's a great game to have like on your Switch or with you on the Switch if you just want to like kill 5-10 minutes of stupid racing action and maybe upgrade some of your cars in the process. It's like a great like game to play if you don't want to put too much thought into stuff and just see crazy stuff.
Hey, look at that. Free $10 gift card with purchase. All right.
Yeah.
Wow.
But the only complaint I really have outside of like the depth, which I don't know if it's a complaint, it's enjoyable sometimes to have a stupid junk food game like this.
Sure.
Is some of the set pieces in the tracks seem to like meld into each other in different tracks. So like they call it a different track, but I think it may be repeating some portions of other tracks. I could be wrong, because I haven't put that much time into it, but some of the elements seem...
They're reusing assets or something?
Well, assets, yes, but I think like actual certain parts of the track may be used, but in like you... Because like some of the things, like I was in an ice area in one level, and like there may have been like Yetis fighting or something like that, like giant Yetis, and I crashed to the floor, and then like I'm in a different track in a completely different environment. Like it's... Things don't make sense in this game. It's just like enjoyable eye candy that you're racing around. It's insanity. But yeah, I'm enjoying Cruise and Blast. It won't be like my game of the year or anything, but it's fun.
Cool. Neil, have you completed your purchase yet?
Just about. I was looking at it. It's only for store pickup, and none of the stores near me have it until next week. I'll do it later. I'll do it when you're talking about what you're talking about. But I'll talk about what I'm going
to
talk
about. Way to just preemptively be like, I'm not going to care about what you're talking about later, so I'll waste time then.
I mean, then I could like actively listen and do a thing. I can multitask, man.
Sure.
Yeah, the rest of us will be ducking out. John will be talking to himself. Like, great podcast, guys.
I can see when you guys mute yourselves. You know that, right?
What?
Yeah.
So I'm going to talk about Super Monkey Ball Banana Mania.
Oh, yeah.
And the preview embargo is up now, which is weird because it's just, I guess I just like can't give it a score. It's really, the embargo thing is just like, you can talk about it, and what can't we talk about? It's like, well, we kind of are. Sega already announced everything about the game. There's still nothing behind.
Right.
But it is, I mean, it's cool because the game is a, I mean, it's a collection of Super Monkey Ball 1, 2, and Adventure, which I had never played before. And that is kind of presented here as like the main story mode, which is, it's a little like weird at first, just to like sort out, like, you know, me coming in with past Monkey Ball experience about like what's where. So like, you do kind of have the main game mode where it has everything. It has the story mode stuff from three games, or I guess more the campaign, because I think Super Monkey Ball 1 and 2 did not really have a story. It's just arcade stages that, like, you know, there's casual, expert, and stuff like that. I forget what all the designations for.
And the mini games.
And the mini games. But it just feels like Monkey Ball. Like, I played levels as Sonic and the dude from Yakuza, Beat from Jet Set Radio. And it's all like, the music's good. Everything feels right. Like, after Banana Blitz HD came out the other year, and I mean, I think that's a bad game to begin with, and I think the port to Switch did not make it any better. This just feels right, and that's such an important element of Super Monkey Ball, just getting that feeling right.
Yeah.
Have you tried playing with the GameCube controller plugged in?
Oh, no, I've not. I should do that. But yeah, I mean, like, the main game stuff feels good. The mini games, however, don't feel as good. The mini games are not like I remember them. And I think some of it has to do, it might be like with whatever engine they're using. I don't want to talk out of my butt as much here, but it's the kind of thing that, like, for example, Monkey Target, when you roll down and you launch yourself at the end of the ramp, it is different in that it seems like there's almost like a canned movement forward that happens no matter what, as opposed to like it being more physics based from the original one. And I noticed the same. I played Monkey Baseball a lot because my oldest son is very obsessed with baseball right now. And Monkey Baseball is perfect because he can play that game well enough to beat me in it. Because he is like a savant at pitching, like, moves it back and forth, very speed. He's bad at hitting, but like, he legit just destroys me when he pitches. he won a game. He the one time he beat me, it was 1-0, and it went to extra innings.
Good for him.
But like, that's the same thing there, where like, and maybe I should go back to the GameCube version to confirm this too, but it's like, when the ball is coming in and you swing, it doesn't seem like it does. I mean, there's a little bit of it matters, like where it hits the bat, but like, it feels like it's like when the swing happens, there's like some other process happening. It's not like a natural physics hit.
Like a by chance thing or something,
yeah,
instead.
It feels different. And I do, I am gonna, before I write the review, which isn't until, you know, closer to the game comes out in October, I'm gonna go back to the GameCube version of, I think I don't have Adventure, but I do have Monkey Ball 1 and 2, and see if I can kind of get to the bottom of how it feels different. And it's still fine. It's still fun. Like, I'm having fun with these arcade games. I just, like, one, Monkey Target just feels weird. Which that's an important thing to get right, even if I don't think I hold that as near and dear to my heart as a lot of other people did. I played a buttload of Monkey Baseball with friends back in the day. That was a very, very good game.
No, I was in the Monkey Target camp and Monkey Bowling.
Yeah, Monkey Bowling's good. Monkey Fight, I've had fun with over the years. It's just that, you know, COVID times, not necessarily playing a lot of local multiplayer with people these days.
Is there online multiplayer in this one? I don't remember.
I don't think so. There is, you know, pretty good online leaderboards. You can also do, like, you know, there's like time attacks and ranking challenges and stuff. And like a lot of unlockables. Like, to make the comparison, you know, we haven't really talked that much about WarioWare yet, but I've been playing some of that too. But WarioWare is the thing where, like, you earn coins and you don't actually get to use them until like after you beat the story, which is just bizarre. Whereas in Monkey Ball, they shower you with coins and then there's just so much to buy. You have the special characters that, you know, outside of, like, you know, Hello Kitty and stuff that are paid DLC that will be available at launch. But, like, you know, you can unlock Sonic, Tails, variants of the monkeys, stuff like that. There's a lot of, like, costumes and photo modes and, like, different like, view. There's, like, a toy mode that's pretty cute that, like, just make changes of the visuals a little bit. Like, photo mode with filters that you can purchase in-game. It's all just super cute.
Does Willem know there's a photo mode?
I should tell. I'll give the code to Aya. Well, I'll rescind it from my Switch and give it to him. For he is the photo mode goddess.
Xander loves those photo modes, too.
Yeah.
We'll get him a code, too.
I mean, yeah, back in the week we took off, Xander talked about photo modes.
I don't know if I listened to that episode.
Maybe we should, John. They're probably just like, John and Neil, big stupid heads.
I like, meant to, because I was like excited when it came out, because I was like, cool, there will be an episode of Connectivity I haven't heard. I should go listen to that. Did you guys ever play the Game Boy Advance Monkey Ball?
No, was it any good?
I don't think I did.
It's fully 3D.
Like, that seems impressive.
It's like just a straight up feature complete Monkey Ball game. But you have to, you play it on a D-pad, which is a little rough.
Yeah,
but that's most of my experience with Monkey Ball, which I'm sure is the definitive Monkey Ball experience.
Wow.
So I always feel like anytime anybody's talking about Monkey Ball, I'm like, I've played that. Not the one anybody
else played.
As long as
you didn't, the 3DS version is horrific.
Oh, yeah. I think I
remember there being a 3DS version.
Oh, I think I reviewed that. It was terrible.
I have it. I reviewed it as well. I think it was one of my lowest 3DS scores.
All right.
And I've played, like, I think there was definitely an early app store on iOS. And that was I think like passable but not great.
There was a Katamari Damacy game like that too that was not great.
Yeah.
Now there is a Monkey Ball I play at Dave and Buster's, but it's like for earning tickets or something, and you have like a giant like trackball that you spin and you just try to like spin it forward and you go down a big ramp, and I'm wondering if like those physics are put into the target stuff, and
maybe
it's really weird and you just have to spin the ball as fast as you can, I think, and like launch yourself off the ramp and you earn tickets or something like that. It's bad. It's stupid.
Yeah.
I don't know why you'd ever want to actually.
They are putting all of the good Monkey Ball games into one package and putting it out on Switch.
Yeah. I just don't know why it's so hard to like get the Monkey Ball formula right. I don't know.
It doesn't seem horribly complicated.
No. But boy, did they not do it right for a very long time.
I know. I'm very excited for this because on GameCube, the first two Monkey Ball games were very good, and I had a good time with them.
Yeah, playing through those, like the, whatchamacallit, like the arcade modes, the single player stuff from Monkey Ball 1 and 2 is bringing back a lot of good memories, because I played those a buttload. Also, like, they're hard. They're very challenging to balance, right? And, like, get all the bananas and things. Yeah, I'm happy that it's on my Switch, and I'll have more on that in a few weeks. I don't know if I can say the exact embargo date, but it will be before it comes out on October 5th. I also want to touch on a little bit. I dabbled into the world of, I don't know, like, does it feel weird to be like, I got repros? They're not even games that came to America.
I mean,
so.
Well, here, Nintendo, if you would like to sponsor this podcast financially, let us know. Until then, our overlords at Xbox have said it's okay if we talk about Nintendo repros.
Yeah, so now, a little bit in advance for getting the Analog Pocket. This is also partially, and this part I don't really feel much remorse for, because it's not like I can like buy a brand new Game Boy Advance game. Dealing with the used market for Game Boy games seems like a hellhole, because there's so many pirated and fakes. And like, if I'm gonna get a fake game, I might as well just know it's a fake game from the start.
Do it on purpose. Yeah, pay appropriately for it.
Yeah. So I got Rhythm Heaven. I guess they call it Rhythm Heaven Silver, which is Rhythm Heaven localized in English, put on a GBA card. And that original Rhythm Heaven game is awesome. I don't really have anything more to say about that. It's a very good game, and I'm happy. I'm playing it on my SP right now, but definitely for when my Analog Pocket comes in December, supposedly, for now.
We hope.
Yeah, I have that. I also got all of the GBA Bit Generations games on a single cartridge.
Oh, cool.
Played a lot of DigiDrive. I love DigiDrive. And it's kind of nice to have that in a physical form, because eventually, like, DSiWare is going to die.
Yeah.
And there's also, like, I think it's called Orbital here, but Orbient, which was another Wii art style game that I really enjoyed. And yeah, there's like some, I mean, it's a mix of like ones that got, you know, WiiWare and DSiWare follow-ups, and other ones that have never really come out anywhere else before, at least in America. And the last thing that I got is the Tingle game for DS, which has nothing to do with the Analog Pocket, but I was just at, like, I've watched some clips of the Tingle game. I have not played it. That Tingle game is incredible. It is so good.
Aren't there two of them?
So I got the first one. Freshly picked Tingle's Rosy Rubyland. I did not get a Balloon Trip of Love. I will probably get that down the road.
Such a good title.
Is that different from Tingle's Balloon Fight or whatever? Which was the BS games. Club Nintendo exclusive in Japan, I think.
Tingle series. Yeah, yeah. So there's a...
Is it a trilogy?
I think it kind of is. Yeah, Tingle's Balloon Fight DS was only available to Club Nintendo members in Japan in 2007.
That's still canon.
It is supposedly a sequel to Tingle's Rosy Rupee Land, but very similar to Balloon Fight. And then there's also apparently a DSiWare app called Too Much Tingle.
Wow.
That has like a calculator, a little dancing Tingle image, a fortune teller, a timer, and a coin flipping minigame.
I really hope that DSiWare emulation manages to catch up before that stuff disappears forever.
So the copy that I have of freshly picked Tingle's Rosy Rubyland plays on a 3DS. And I think part of that is because it came out in Europe. So there is an English version of it that exists.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I don't know exactly what all of this means, but Ripened Tingle's Balloon Trip of Love, which is the follow-up to it, that only came out in Japan. And I know when I was looking at listings for it, that only works on DS systems, I think. Which I think it has something to do with like the kind of added piracy stuff on 3DS.
It's nothing to do with like region locking or anything, but right. I know the 3DS was region locked. I don't remember if the DS was.
The DSi was because DSiWare.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I believe. Yeah, because I got like Inazuma 11 and stuff, and I played that on DS, so that was no problem. And I think I was Band Brothers they came out in Europe. But yeah, this is going down a road in which when I finish Rosy Rubyland, I'm going to get Balloon Trip of Love, because I think these games are incredible. The setup for it is that you're just like a regular middle-aged man, and like you put in your actual name, just like what's your name, and then you wake up and you go and Uncle Rupee is like, you can come to Rupee Land. You just need to get a bunch of money and wear this outfit, and then you put on the Tingle outfit. And he's like, your name is Tingle now. If you notice on Twitter, I put up that picture of just like, you are no longer Neil, you are Tingle now. And then for the rest of the game, you are just Tingle, but it's super funny and weird. And it reminds me a lot because it does kind of share that DNA with Moon Remix RPG Adventure. That game that, you know, was a PlayStation 1 game that came out on Switch and was in English for the first time a year ago. Where it just has that like super quirky style, weird animation of characters, like definitely from that, you know, that Onion Games, Skip Limited, and in this case, Vanpool, because that's the company that developed it, which, you know, has some of that crossover from people. I even see, honestly, I can see how Vanpool working on this, because I think it's the same guy who did these works on the Paper Mario games now. I get it. Like, I can see that through line. So if you're mad about Paper Mario being what it is now, blame Tingle.
Or thank him.
Yeah.
But how does this fill into the actual timeline? I'm just kidding. It's not listed on anything. So
do you remember, like, this was probably back in like 2015, we were tossing around the idea of creating a Hyrule Apocrypha.
Yeah, this should be the focus of it.
We should go back to that.
Yeah.
I think if we worked on something together, John, we'd tear each other's heads off.
Probably. I mean, the DK Historia is still just like this bombshell of a bunch of notes and stuff in there. And just like, it was, everybody folded their arms and nothing happened.
Well, the problem with DK Historia is it becomes also Mario Historia.
Yeah.
So it's like it's not just like a small Donkey Kong project. It becomes like a huge Mario and Donkey Kong project.
I feel like the non-canon Zelda games are nicely contained. It's very clear what they are.
Yeah.
And
well, except for the most recent one.
That
Hyrule Warriors.
Yeah. The new one,
Age of Calamity.
Yeah.
No, that's an Elsworth tale.
It could be canon. It could not be. We don't know.
Based on how the timeline has worked so far, there's nothing getting in the way of it being canon.
No, there isn't. But we don't know if it is.
So are you saying we should wait for Breath of the Wild 2 to come out before we do this?
Yeah, but then you could probably still make the argument, possibly, that it still could be canon.
We'll
maybe
see.
Not.
When Aster shows up in Breath of the Wild 2, then we'll know if it was important or not.
Oh, God. Age of Calamity, why?
Why was it so good? I don't know.
No, it wasn't so good.
I wish it ran better, but it's a great game.
So to kind of finish the Tingle stuff, I mean, we don't have to. We can talk about Tingle forever. I'm down with that. It also is haunting because they keep on referring to Tingle as a 35-year-old man. And like,
Justin, that part is canon.
Justin, I think you are already there. I am almost there. It's weird.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, I'm ready to put the Tingle stuff on and give it a try because certain things aren't working out in life. So let's go for it.
I think for the year that I turn 35, I'm going to be Tingle for Halloween.
I think you should just be Tingle for the year you turn 35.
Yeah, all right.
Just so, the whole year. You put that years, on and you count do not it down. Take it off.
Yeah, let's do yeah. it. Oh, sorry. I missed it. Sorry.
Damn it, Justin. but so the way the game works is that you're kind of going through towns trying to amass a fortune. And you do this, rupees are also your health.
I remember that. Yeah.
You go into battle by just running into enemies, and then, like, just a cloud of dust shows up, and then, like, over time, you'll fight them, but you kind of, like, want to get a bunch of enemies in the same cloud of dust at once to kind of wipe them out as quickly as you can, and you get rewards, you get ingredients that you can use to, like, make, make different recipes and stuff like that. And then you can give items to like villagers and other characters. Usually to get them to talk to you in the first place, you have to give them some amount of rupees that the game does not tell you. And if you give too little, they might just be like, nah. And then you have to basically they take the money and then you have to start from zero. And if you give too much, then you wasted money. So it's this like fun guessing game of like trying to guess like how greedy are these people going to be? And then you have dungeons that you go through as well. And there's even boss battles. I'm in the first dungeon right now. Still pretty early, but I love so much about what this game is putting down.
Yeah, I remember Nintendo Power bringing it up and being like, yeah, rupees are also your health and everything is about rupees. And like, it sounds a little bit like Wario, but like, I want to see where this goes. And then I think they had a poll or something in one of them. It's like, would you buy this game if it came out here? And I definitely responded, however it was, either mail or online, whatever they said to do. I said, yes. And
yeah,
no,
unfortunately, no.
At least you know you're not part of the problem.
Yeah. Another thing we can blame Reggie for.
Yes. I mean, I think Reggie was good for some things and horrible for other things.
Yeah. He's not good at bringing out quirky Japanese games into America.
Not at all.
Like, it's weird. It's weird. I mean, I'm used to like Super Mario RPG not going to Europe, not like Xenoblade being brought to America kicking and screaming.
In why we didn't get Pokemon typing.
Yeah.
There was a Pokemon typing?
I gave that to Zach. I got Pokemon typing.
With a keyboard.
At a PAX East or something.
It's for DS, John.
Yeah.
Oh.
It comes with a
Bluetooth keyboard. I wasn't paying attention during the DS, so that makes sense.
Yeah.
It didn't come here, so it's easy to miss if you weren't.
But yeah, I'm really looking forward to getting my Analog Pocket.
Oh, me too. I'm very upset that it didn't come before I'm replaying some of these Metroid games.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping there's some nice options within there. But either way, it's going to be nice to have a device to play on. And I ordered the dock too, so I could
same here.
Have a better way to play on the TV.
And I will say I got an Analog Super NT. I might have talked about it on the show when I first got it. But like I have faith in the company to give me something good.
Yeah, the only reason I really didn't order one of those is because I do have the OSSC and I could connect.
Yeah, yeah. That stuff. Was looking into it, like I don't have it was a little bit of like I just have original hardware. I don't really have anything to make this better. So this kind of allows me to access my Super Nintendo games in a better way.
Yeah, and like maybe that is better than doing it this way with the OSSC, but you know, it's probably close enough and yeah. I don't need to drop more money on that right now.
It depends on what you're looking for out of your games. Yep.
The NES one they have is more tempting because there's no good signal out of the NES.
I'm at that point where like I just have a bunch of old systems that like I'm like these things aren't going to run forever. What am I going to do with all these games? Maybe it might involve me investing in some of these, you know, analog products and other things just to make sure I have a way to kind of play them in the future.
Yep.
But yeah, that's what I've been doing. Cool. Outside of also Skatebird is disappointing. Go read my review.
It's
a bummer. So John, what have you been up to outside of Metroid Fusion?
So Darksiders 3 is coming out on Switch at the end of this month. We haven't seen anything of it,
which is mildly concerning.
We'll see what happens. It didn't run great on Xbox One, so okay. But going into that, I figured like I kind of wanted to get kind of a baseline, just remind myself what Darksiders 3 was like, as kind of a point of comparison. And I've got this shiny new Xbox Series X, and I had not played Darksiders 3 on it. And as I mentioned, it didn't run great on Xbox One. So I popped it in there, and I had a save file like a little over halfway through the game. So I wound up just playing through the entire back half of Darksiders 3 on Xbox Series X, and it ran so well. And I was this game is so much better than I remember it. Like, Series X just fixes almost all of my problems with this game. This is just incredible. I can't wait to play this on Switch. Oh, it's gonna suck on Switch again, isn't it? So I've done this thing where I've taken a game that I liked, but I didn't have super high technical experiences with, and then given myself a perfect technical experience with it. So I'm ready to play what will no doubt be the worst version of it, will be interesting. But then that got me on a kick of I finished that. And it's one of those things where when you pick up a save file for a game that you're almost at the end of, you kind of like, I finished it kind of just as I was like getting back into the mood for those Darksiders games. And so I wound up going like, well, I reviewed the Switch version of the first Darksiders, and I definitely didn't finish it. Like, I was just kind of judging the port. So I think I played about halfway through that one too. So I'll go play that one. So I also finished the first Darksiders on Switch, and am now currently playing through the back half of Darksiders 2 on Switch, in my weird accelerated second half of Darksiders games marathon. I'm not sure where my save file is at in Darksiders Genesis, but if it's around the halfway mark, I may revisit that one too. Because why not just clear out the entire series from the backlog?
Yeah, that's so I've only played the first Darksiders.
I think that's the worst one.
That makes me more it makes it more enticing.
I think a lot of people like the first one more than the second one, but I do not. I think the first one is firmly the worst one.
Yeah, like I've always wanted to play Genesis because of the pedigree of it's the people that the team that made Battle Chasers Night War, yeah, which I adore. Went on to make that, and it seems Genesis seems to be up my alley. And like, yeah, I've always kind of appreciated the Joe Madness of the series. Mm-hmm. And I know you and Zach threatened on Twitter to like do a Darksiders episode, which now I'm in favor of, and maybe it'll encourage me to pick up some of those games that I haven't played yet.
Yeah, I mean, they're just, we've said it a million times, and it's all over the internet, but they're just 3D Zelda games.
Yeah.
The first two are like, the first one is just 3D Zelda with God of War combat. The second one is 3D Zelda with God of War combat and a Diablo loot system. The third one is 3D Zelda, but also it's a Souls-like. And then Genesis is, what if 3D Zelda was kind of 2D, which is a novel concept that, you know, I wish Nintendo would really explore more. I'm sure a lot of like Nintendo fans who are very hardcore Nintendo fans played the second one a bit because it was a launch title on Wii U. Not the best version of that game. But I've always been amazed that these games didn't catch on a little bit more with Nintendo fans, because since that Wii U second one, all of them have in some way hit a Nintendo system, and they're just really good Zelda games. In some cases, better than some of the Zelda games. But
it's not a high bar these days, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's that is like playing the second one. There have been moments where I'm playing that I'm like, man, this really just feels like Twilight Princess, but a little better. And it's crazy that they're not more popular than they are, given how good they are.
Yeah, I may have it on Switch. but
I think I own three copies of the first Darksiders across various platforms. That one was weird because the second Darksiders being a launch title for Wii U, the first one was one of the last games for Wii U, because they put the War Mastered Edition, which was one of the earliest victims of THQ Nordic's horrible remaster naming conventions. They put that on Wii U like way after the Switch came out.
Yeah, I think it was one of the last Wii U games, like retail ones. Yeah,
and it, like, nobody stocked it. I had to I had to find a store that was stocking it so I could buy it, because I'm like, I'm gonna have this, because I, at the time, I had my Wii U games on the shelf in order of when they released. And so I was really excited. I was like, I can put Darksiders 2 at the beginning of this shelf, and I can put Darksiders 1 at the end of this shelf. And that's the best kind of horrible. So I needed to do that.
So you organize your games by order in which you got them?
No, in the order in which they came out.
Okay. Interesting.
And that's, it changes every time I reorganize. I pick a random order. I've also done order in which they take place in time, which is much more difficult. But yields interesting results.
Need multiple shelves for Zelda, branching it out.
Yes. Yeah, you have to get, yeah. You have to have three copies of Breath of the Wild, put it at the end of every timeline.
I don't think that's true, but we'll find out, I guess.
Well, you can put, you know, that's what it is. There'll be, so Breath of the Wild will take place at the end of one timeline. Breath of the Wild 2 will take place at the end of another, and Age of Calamity will take place at the end of another.
No, please no.
That's what's going to happen, Justin. 100% confirmed. Might as well put out a new copy of the Historia.
With only two timelines this time, because one of them didn't happen.
They all happen, Justin. You don't have to like it.
I've played Ocarina of Time many times, and I never saw that third one come into existence.
Justin, you got to watch my timeline. You helped make, or you helped complain about the timeline video.
Yeah, I contributed. Your knowledge, but
that doesn't mean I agree with it.
Yeah, I criticize that. I will always criticize that third timeline, and I'll acknowledge I respect Nintendo's decision to have a third timeline. I'll look at it, but I'll say that's bullshit the whole time.
You don't have to die for the third timeline to exist.
I don't agree with that either. According to what I read, the way I read the book was a little different, John. But
I just read what it said. That's the difference between you and me.
I read the words too, which I'm surprised you were able to read the words, John, considering you don't like to read instruction booklets from what I
heard. This wasn't a booklet. This was the Hyrule Historia. It's different.
It's a big instruction booklet.
There are no instructions in it. It tells me how to do nothing. That's why
it instructed you how to make a video.
That's fair.
You know, it's something I want to remember, Justin, if you will, on an episode of Nintendo News Report, near the end of 2017, where I may or may not have come to blows with you about Mario Odyssey.
Oh, how it's like saying Mario Odyssey was my game
better,
of the year.
Better than Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
I remember very tense. I don't think Mario Odyssey is better than Breath of the Wild, but I think I'm at a point where truly, outside of Bowser's Fury, which is still my favorite game of the entire year, Mario Odyssey is really good. Like, I think it's my favorite 3D Mario at this point. I must say 3D.
It's my favorite 3D.
No, I mean, I think it has some issues, but like, I think overall it's a very fun game and it controls very nice. And the thing I like about that game is like, you're always quickly moving on to the next challenge or doing something fun. And like Breath of the Wild, it's like so plodding and slow and the world's too big. And I mean, I've gone into it, but I just feel like it's nonstop fun action.
Super Mario Odyssey is the Samus Returns of the Mario franchise. It controls very well. It's also kind of a shitty game, but boy, does it control really well.
Yeah. Although I think my difference
there's too much of it
is that my opinion on Mario Odyssey has raised over the ensuing years, whereas my opinion of Samus Returns has gone down a little bit. But I also, like, I mean, I don't know. I probably feel about them in similar ways overall. Like, yeah, Mario Odyssey is not without its flaws. I think where I'm at with that, and especially after seeing Bowser's Fury, I am so excited for whatever the next, you know, truly original full 3D Mario game is. Because, yeah, like Odyssey and Bowser's Fury, it's not, I don't think it's the exact same team, but it's definitely like that Tokyo development studio working on both. They are doing really cool things with 3D Mario, and I want to see what they do after they've learned from, you know, Mario Odyssey was almost 4 years ago.
Yeah.
like that potential sequel or successor or whatever. I might be more excited for the potential of that than I am Breath of the Wild 2 at this point.
No, I definitely am, but
I'm.
Yes, but yeah, but yeah, it's gonna be really fun. I think my biggest complaint with Bowser's Fury is they kept the run button separate, and that made it hard to run and control this camera at the same time. So I ended up going to the Switch options and making the run button the shoulder button, so you can run around and also move the camera freely.
You don't eagle grip.
You know, I want my hands to last the next 30 years of my gaming, so
You got plenty of extra fingers.
But yeah, I mean, I could do it. It just felt stupid, and it's not necessary to do that. And I think that was one of the big flaws about the controls in that game, is because in the other 3D Mario games, there isn't a run button. You just hold the stick and you run, and it was weird.
It was subservient to 3D World, was arguably its greatest weakness.
But yeah, I really thought it was a fun short game.
Yeah,
and I thought to myself, speedrunning this game could be fun, but then you look and you have to do those stupid, weird, like, zigzag hops, because that's the fastest way to move through the world, and I'm like, this is dumb, I don't want to even bother with that.
It cemented my thinking that Mario Odyssey wasn't what I wanted, and gave me a very clear image of what I do want. So, yeah, no, Bowser's Fury, I think, is still game of the year for me, probably.
Just don't play it in handheld.
I mean,
it's fine.
You're not wrong, but it's I mean, this, I guess it's also considering that John and I were like, Age of Calamity holds up fine. Fair. Yeah.
No, I think it's Age of Calamity is like struggling even not in handheld.
Yeah.
So it's like, whatever. And then I played Bowser's Fury on the TV. It's like, wow, this is really smooth. It's great. And then you put it in hand, you're like, oh God, what happened? Well, the frame, oh, help.
Especially when Bowser shows up, it gets real rough.
Yeah, I don't think I did it that well.
Like, I think they are using literally like the engine from 3D World, and doing crazy, like the entire game is on water, and all of the water has like real time screen space reflections. Like, you look at that game, like, not in motion, and it's like, holy crap, like, this is gorgeous.
It really is.
But I think the fact that they were using the engine from a game from what, 2000, when did that come out?
2013.
Yeah. It shows some, it's putting out some pretty incredible things, but it shows some age.
Yeah.
I'd love to see that design given like total freedom away from 3D World.
And I do also, I mean, like, one thing that I like about 3D World a lot too, is like, I played the first half of that multiple times. My original 100% save file may or may not have been erased by a toddler. Who can say? But like, played the beginning parts of that game many, many times, and you can like go in so many different directions if you want to. There's gates to it as you open things up, but like, you can just go around and explore, and you're probably going to find something. It's a joy to mess around with in.
Yeah.
Mario games are good.
Yeah. And that's the same thing with Odyssey.
Yeah, even the worst ones are still great games.
Odyssey just has such a good sense of play that, I mean, I think it's what drew me to Mario 64 back when that came out. And that's why, yeah, I can poke holes in Odyssey, but it nails a very important factor in 3D Mario games for me that, I mean, I really think to some extent, I think every 3D Mario has done that successfully. You know, some better than others. But even Sunshine is just fun to run around in.
No, it definitely is. Like,
yeah,
it's fun.
Some of those shines are bullshit, but you know what's not bullshit? All the control you have over Mario.
No, it's Sunshine is the Mario game for hardcore pro gamers.
And that might be, I guess that's why my son keeps on booting it up, which I did realize he got really into swimming pools over the summer. And I think he just wants to play the game where Mario can go around in the water.
It is the water is so pleasant. GameCube era video game water.
Yeah, get him with that poison shine with the red coins.
He will run around the overworld and then hop into a level and just hand me the controller, and I'm like, you come on, man.
Help.
Like it's just a help, and I'm like, oh, fine. I'll fight Petey Piranha, I guess.
Final play, Mario Sunshine. Yeah,
I'll have fun with video games with you, son.
How dare you try to bond with me?
Yeah. I wouldn't have to do this if you didn't delete my save file.
Yeah.
We could have just looked at the finished profile, marveled at the 100%.
I will say also, my Odyssey save file has been deleted, but my wife has played Odyssey. She played it during the pandemic. And like, I forget what she is at with the moon count, but it is more than I ever got. And like, we guard her save file like we try to make sure that he can't get into her account at all. Because I am at the point where I'm just at like, yeah, man, like I'm finished with that game. If you're going to go in and delete my Mario Golf save, who cares? Like, good. I can just ignore that single player mode more. Oh, you do get some nice unlocks at the end of the single player.
I don't remember what you unlocked, but I just remember you powered up my Mii or whatever, which is probably the best character in the game, but then no mode really lets you use it. Like, you go online, people are like, no, you can't use it. It's like, well, why did I do this? I was able to use this in my other Mario
Golf. I'm sorry, John.
No matter how much you guys hated it, it won't affect my love for it. So, I mean, you know, you go ahead, get it out.
Let's go to listener mail.
Okay.
And then we'll get out of here. So Steven writes, hello, everyone. Thanks for all the great answers on the podcast. Really appreciate the thought and effort I put in. With the disappointing Atari VCS launch and lack of a Switch Pro, I've been looking at other non-Nintendo consoles being released, namely the A500, the Amico, the Playdate, and Evercade Versus. Are you guys interested in any of these, and why? Do you think any of these games will end up coming to Switch? Which would you pre-order, wait for price drop, wait for reviews, or avoid?
What the hell is an A500?
I sincerely don't know.
That's the only one I haven't heard of, I think.
I recognize these other ones.
Yeah, I have a Playdate pre-ordered. I'm very excited for it. I guess those are shipping out November, December, something like that. I think I got them.
An Amiga.
Really?
It's got a keyboard.
But yeah, Playdate I have pre-ordered. I'm very, very much looking forward to that. It seems like a goofy, quirky thing. And it just kind of, I like the experimental nature of it. They have a lot of good creative minds working on games. And as for whether or not I think any of those games will come to Switch, I do not think they will. Maybe I'm wrong.
I'm really invested in looking at this.
Not going to get the Amico. Researches the A500, I'm not going to get the Amico. Seems like a scam.
A scam that had a lot of big names tied to it.
Unfortunately, now that I said that, Tommy Tallarico is going to harass our podcast.
No, I don't care. Tommy Tallarico, from what I remember back in the day, and this is probably long forgotten lore, he was a big jerk on early videos. Weren't as prominent back in the early 2000s. But there are videos of him just like trashing GameCube and Kirby's Air Ride and Nintendo fans in general and stuff like that. But no, then he turns it around a few years later. No, come to my video game concert. I'm nice.
Metroid Prime.
Yeah, it's like, wait, but you trash Nintendo fans. Like, I don't understand this guy's problem.
Like, it is the kind of thing that, like, I guess, to be fair, that was like 17 years ago.
Yeah, it was. I will say that. But for some reason, I still remember.
However, F him. I don't think a lot of the response and defensiveness to the Amico and kind of the public eye out there, I don't think it has been becoming of Mr. Tallarico.
No.
And I when I first heard the Amico was announced, I was a little bit curious, because it did seem like it had some good minds behind it. Like, I think there's actually some like old Nintendo of America talent that were associated with it.
Yeah, I think Perrin Kaplan
and
Beth Lulin.
Yeah. I think they were both involved with it. I don't know if they still are. But I was curious about it, and I don't really understand who the Amico is for at this point, because the goal seems to be like, we're making like affordable games for everybody to play, but then they're just like, it's Earthworm Jim. And like all the, like basically just bringing back arcade games from 40 years ago to say that they're bringing back arcade games from 40 years ago, when like, I don't know, if you're trying to make a thing for everybody to play, maybe just make new games. And don't rely on old IP, because it seems like when you're relying on old IP, you're just relying on old fans.
Well, I don't think relying on old IP is always a bad idea, but I just think,
I mean, we're Nintendo fans, of course.
Yes. Yeah, I'm going to think that, but like, Switch is doing very well now, and a lot of revivals have done very well.
Thanks to ARMS. Yes.
Yeah.
But I will say in the terms of Switch, like I'll always point to Animal Crossing, and I know, like Justin, I think we are a little bit in agreement over aspects of New Horizon being disappointing, because I think it kind of simplifies a lot of the series, and
it's unfinished, and
yeah,
I hope it gets finished before I'm dead.
There's no gyroids, damn it. Give me my gyroids. I need to have a gyroid basement.
I need to have a coffee shop. I need to have things. Yeah. It's missing a whole lot. That's a whole other podcast, but yeah.
But I get why they did that, because, and it paid off. Like, yes, they had the COVID assist that made it as high selling as it was. But I think it was, regardless of the pandemic, I think Animal Crossing New Horizon was going to do very well, not nearly as well as it wound up doing because of being so right place, right time. Because I think it did a good job of being approachable to new players while still doing enough to make sure that we showed up. And I think that's a tightrope that Nintendo has walked extremely well with their most successful new games. I think Mario Kart 8, very approachable. I think Breath of the Wild is more approachable than any other Zelda game has arguably ever been. Mario Odyssey,
really
extremely approachable. I'm trying to think of any other games that would fit into this mark. Smash Brothers, I don't think is really that approachable. It's still very successful. Pokemon, Let's Go might not have been as successful, but that was very approachable. And I think, I guess what I'm saying is that I think there's a way to use old IP in a way that it doesn't feel old. And I do not see that from the Amico right now. Maybe whenever it comes out, because I don't think it's coming out this year, it will surprise me, but I don't think so.
I mean, I just don't have high hopes for it in general, and the whole person being associated with the system at this point and the behavior and everything like that. I think it just put like a whole black eye on the whole project. So it will be interesting to see what happens with it, but I think at one point I'm like, when they first announced it, I'm like, wow, all these people behind it, like this sounds like it has potential, but that was so long ago now and it's been delayed so many times, I feel like, and honestly, I don't know what they're going for. I don't know who this is for.
Neil, does the site want to buy me one of these A500 things?
We could talk later. Bye.
Okay.
Is this email written by the people behind A500?
Probably.
For John.
You can just, it has 25 built-in games, and then you can just pop in a USB stick with a ROM of whatever other Amiga games you want and just play them on it. And it comes with a mouse and a controller.
That's pretty cool.
I'm excited. I kind of want one.
The Evercade Versus looks pretty cool. I'm looking at it now.
But I'm not sure what that is. I've heard of it.
I don't think I would get it. No. Retro gaming home console, support for up to 4 players locally, dual cartridge slots, supports Evercade cartridge ecosystem. You can use the USB controllers. If over 280 games will be available by the end of 2021, subject to license.
As long as they'll let us.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't look like there's that much that I would care to play.
No, I mean, as far as these things go, and I probably doesn't count because it plays Nintendo games, it's the Analog Pocket, which I pre-ordered forever ago, and looking forward to see what that does.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, we talked about that. Analog Pocket, I'm very excited for. And the Playdate, I'm very excited for. I might get those around the same time. That sounds pretty cool to me.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that might be a podcast. One of those things. Thank you so much, Justin, for joining us. It was fun to hear the Metroid 2 Defense Force come out. When I do get my Analog Pocket, I might be playing my copy of Metroid 2 on it.
Yeah, it's a pleasure being here, and Metroid 2 is a short, fun game. So,
John, you didn't have any other choice, but you were here, and I appreciate that.
I sure was.
You can email us more listener mail, so that way we can research consoles in response to your question live on the show. Connectivity@NintendoWorldReport.com. You can also hit us up on Twitter @ConnectivityNWR. If you do add us with a question, we'll find it. Don't worry. But that's all we got for this week. Next week, we'll be back. Who knows what we'll be talking about then. Hope springs eternal for Nintendo Direct.
It is September.
Yep. As is tradition. All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Till next time.
This was made possible by our generous supporters on Patreon. Check out patreon.com/NWR for all the details.